All right. The hole that I am dreaming of is one of my favorite par fours in the world, because the amount of different ways that it can be attacked is almost infinite, and the shot shapes are very stock shapes for our game. It is in a stretch of very iconic holes on tour on this course. It's really odd. I think this course has, like, in a stretch of like 5 or 6 holes, it has like a bunch of holes that really stand out in my mind. So the first shot on this hole is kind of a straight tunnel shot. All you have to do is just throw something dead straight, 230, 280 feet, maybe. If you want to throw a forehand to have a hyzer and get around the corner, you can. And then the second shot is also a straight shot, and it finishes to the left on a sloping green in a grove of trees. Definitely the
wild. I know it. Idlewild, is that right?
Yes.
Hole, the one after the ace run. What is it, 12-ish?
Yeah, it's 12. It's 2 after the ace run. Everybody forgets about that little uphill. Oh, it is after the ace run. You're right.
So
yeah,
lost
it's
right
Idlewild
now.
Hole 12. After.
Oh yeah, there's 2 ace runs there. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Right. Idlewild Hole 12. I got a point.
I can't believe you got that one. I can't believe out of all the courses you thought of Idlewild. Maybe it's because it's
I'm
next
mentally
week.
Already in Kentucky.
I am
because that's my next
so
event.
Not in Kentucky right now. I am so in Illinois currently.
Illinois.
Yeah, I'm. I'm not jealous, I gotta say. But how is it over there? Welcome back to the podcast, you Illinois boys.
Illinois boys. Yeah. Wow. A lot of stuff has happened. Welcome to episode 23. Wow. That's a lot of episodes. But yeah, Joey and I are in Germantown Hills, right next to Peoria, Illinois, for the 2025 Ledgestone Insurance Open. And when I first saw Joey out here, we looked at each other, we gave each other a hug. He's like, at least we're at a place with a really great host. And that is very true. Shout out Anita, who this is my third time staying here. 2021, last year for Champions Cup, and this year Joey stayed here a bunch. I don't even know how many times. But she opens up her house. She charges a very reasonable fee. She cooks for all the players who stay here.
We just had good burgers.
We just had some really good burgers. And it's just it's great. It's a huge house, super comfortable. And it makes Peoria as fun as it can be.
Yep. Yeah, Anita, I first stayed with her in 2019 when I was working for the Disc Golf Pro Tour. She kind of writes this big kind of, she types it out and prints it, this kind of like house instructions list every year. But next to it, she puts a list of all the people who have stayed here. And it's like somewhat in chronological order. So when you go and look, like the top, some of the beginning names is like Steve Dodge, Todd Dodge, like OGs. In the game, Philo stayed here. Calvin Heimberg stays here like every year. Obviously, Eagle, Kyle Klein stayed here. Simon, you came and played pool one night, I'm pretty sure.
Wait, is this the place where we had corn?
No, this is the place with like the super huge basement and the high ceilings and the big pool table. And I think you came with like Matty-O up from the hotel you guys were staying in down by the river. And yeah, you just came for like a night to play pool on the big table. And it's like a big
Wait,
room.
Is that with... Ah, I think I remember. And Yeah. I remember. A lot of people are sleeping in the basement, right?
Yes, lots of people are sleeping. And there's a Galaga machine, like the Space Invaders. Basically, you'll find Calvin there at any given point on the weekend. You'll find him playing Space Invaders. I think he cares more about that this week than disc golf.
It's his jam. I mean, it's worked for him before.
Yeah, it's a great place.
This brings back a cringe story. A fail on tour. I was with Jerome. I don't know if you guys remember Jerome, my friend from Germany.
Oh, yeah.
We actually got blacklisted from this house.
Oh my gosh, you totally did.
This house?
Yeah. Simon did. It was a series of innocent yet incorrectly perceived things
Is this not podcastable?
Well,
I think it is. I mean, Jerome had to pee.
Yeah.
And being a nature boy like he is, and just
he got caught
growing up
camera.
In Germany, we have like different rules and we have like different etiquette, I guess, when it comes to peeing. And he just kind of peed at his earliest convenience in the backyard. And the host was not pleased.
Nope.
With that,
she was not appeased.
Solution.
She was not appeased.
Not appeased. So Rome yeah, we got an angry text. I think that evening or the following morning. Oh, that made me feel bad.
Well,
I always feel really bad when I bring people not joy.
That's not great, but it's funny. I was reading the posted notes.
Oh, my hunch was right.
There's one thing that was wild. It's like somebody was smoking cigarettes inside her house and putting out cigarettes in her plants. She was finding cigarette butts in her plants. That's pretty wild. Like, come on.
Wait, was that the story that happened?
No.
Now I'm all
confused. No. This was not the same night.
Okay.
That's just she had a little this has happened at my house in the past.
Mm-hmm.
Is the peeing on there?
That was not
if you're
on
hosting
there.
The peeing is not written on there, so you didn't make the list.
If you're hosting rock stars, you gotta expect rock star behavior.
She did say don't invite guests over. That is listed.
Yeah, so we're very
everyone needs to be screened.
Mm-hmm.
We do a good screening process, I think. But definitely can be like things can get out of control quickly with these gatherings that happen. So I do organize like a fair bit of gatherings. This week I'm like one of the point people at our place just to like, cause I've known her the longest. So I definitely like created the group chat and, make
You're
sure
the coordinator.
Like, I try to coordinate and, same with steak nights. And I just like, I don't know. I think it's like partially who I am too. I just try to like set things up with communicating a lot early so everybody knows like what's going on, but I don't know, I think those things can get a little those gatherings like that, like you just start saying yes to everyone, you're gonna regret it once you have to talk to the host about the 40 wild people that were over that night.
Yeah, not taking off their shoes, going in and out of the house, tracking mud in, breaking stuff, it's letting the dog out. There's a bunch of stuff.
Yeah.
I think we are a bit too used to being hosted and we're just so comfortable instantly that we kind of sometimes forget.
Yeah, don't tell us to make ourselves at home. Don't do it.
People have different roles and I mean how many freaking houses have we stayed at in the last decade? Like countless. So it's just something you get sometimes maybe too comfortable and too used to and you kind of forget basic etiquette sometimes that you're not at your own house.
Yeah. You know, I was just sitting out on the deck with Dan Schlitter, who's one of our roommates this week. He's a local Illinois boy who has stayed here many times. And I don't know if you played or heard of Dan Schlitter, but he's been on tour a few times, Simon.
I've heard the name. No, yeah, for sure.
So we were talking just about like how interesting it is to me that like we stay in so many different houses, so we get like the rare opportunity to like see all these different layouts of like how people could live, but we don't actually like live in one spot for a long time, at least most of us who are nomads. And it's just crazy week in and week out, like how the social room lays out depending on just like what house that you're in. And sometimes it's like everybody has their own rooms and it can be a lot more antisocial on tour, I think. And this week is a opposite example, especially downstairs, where everybody is all like very much like communally all staying in the same little, like it's like summer camp.
The community has to coordinate bedtimes.
Yeah, exactly. And like lights out, and but also like everybody's like staying up, hanging out, playing pool. Like, I don't know. It's just funny how like when most of these rooms and houses were built, like before the phone existed, there wasn't like a ton of that realization. And now that like every place you go, you have like your own kind of like personal entertainment device and you can just check out, now it really matters like how these rooms are made.
Yeah, it's freaking sad. We're losing human connection with one another. We got to bring it back, and that's our job here at the Crushed Pepper Podcast.
So put your phones down and go into your common spaces and mingle with your people who are living in the same apartment or house as you. And I know that I enjoy the weeks that we have that ability to be all together a lot of the time. I think that makes tour a lot more fun for me.
When Ratana's on her phone for too long and I can tell she's just in a scrolling rabbit hole, I'll like knock her phone out of the way and get up in her face and says, "It's me time now."
Yeah, that's great.
And then it's fun. It's mm-hmm. like you gotta break the cycle of scrolling of whatever variety you fall into. I mean, Instagram reels are pretty awesome sometimes, though, I'm not gonna lie.
No, it's like a crazy, just like, it's like so much dopamine.
So much
mind melting.
Uh-huh.
What do you think about, I think like...
I think it's really annoying sometimes because when I am in bed, knowing I should be going to sleep, I keep scrolling for like an hour, hour and a half, sometimes 2 hours, like no problem. And I like have to make myself stop because I'm like so unbelievably entertained. But then other times when I'm just sitting around at the airport or something and need to like have time fly by because I'm just doing nothing and waiting, I try to start this doom scrolling or watching Instagram reels and I'm just not entertained. Not I'm like fun. Bored. And I was like, why doesn't this happen at night? When I want to go to bed and stop being on my phone, it's like
that happened to me
so
last night.
So annoying.
My problem is my Insta or my YouTube sub box. It's like, and my watch later list is like, it was like 10:15 last night. I know I should be sleeping, but I just want to watch what's in my YouTube so bad. But then I'm like, sleep is much more important. And I remember the days where there was just less content. And in a way, it was better because you could actually be more selective about what you can consume. And then, I mean, everybody and their mom is making content now. So it's like our attention is at an all-time low, which is sad when there's so much that you want to pay attention to.
I think for me, sometimes I wish I actually was like wasting my time on the bucket list of like videos and movies and shows that I want to see. But like a lot of the doom scrolling isn't even on like stuff that I have like earmarked to like go and watch or make sure I go watch this. Like it's not coming from my like list of like shows or YouTube videos that I want to see. Like it comes when I like try to go do something like in a messaging capacity on Instagram and it just like kind of lurches at you from out of nowhere.
It's kind of sad that nowadays watching a movie feels like you're being productive.
Yeah.
It's impossible to watch a movie nowadays.
And then like reading a book, you're like, you're
some weird hippie with a habit.
It's like, what's happened to you? And that back in the day, that was like the number one entertainment.
you would look at somebody who reads all day and is like, oh, that guy just, he's off in La La Land.
I mean, I think like for us this year, I mean, last week, or I guess 2 weeks ago in Finland, the sauna and the pond and the hot tub, that whole little area was clutch for our group. At least for most of us in that group. I mean, we used that like every night, Simon, I feel like. And we were down there and I don't know, you can't have your phone in the sauna. There's just like no option.
Actually, a lot of the saunas I frequent back home, it's astounding how many people bring their phone into the sauna. It's so sad to me. They're AirPodded and phoned up when they are sweating at 200 degrees Fahrenheit. It's like, come on, really? That's sad.
I thought that, wouldn't it hurt? That's why I never like even messed with, I never really thought about bringing a phone or any like attachments into the sauna because of the way that people with jewelry have reacted with like a necklace or bracelet being
did
like,
do you have to take your earrings out?
Nope, no, I have not had that.
Yeah, they don't get that hot.
But I guess a phone doesn't maybe either. I don't know. It just seems like...
Just don't bring your phone in the sauna. Come on.
I think for us, though, it was great to have a space to chat every evening. And then, I don't know, I didn't feel myself like needing to go after technology. But there was moments like when we were all up in the living room in the morning or even in the afternoon where I like looked up and I like counted like 8 people all sitting in one communal room on couches and chairs. The TV wasn't on. Nobody was cooking. And all 8 people were just like quietly looking at their phones. And I was just like, man, like, and like we all do it. Like I say this as a victim of it as much as anybody else. Like I am not here to criticize. It's just crazy. Like how, and for most of us, like you and me and I think especially me and Eagle, like, I don't know. Like, there wasn't a lot of years without this type of technology available. Like, I have, like, a few memories from, like, pre-smartphone days.
Up to this point, I've lived about half my life with a smartphone.
What do you remember?
I remember that I despise smartphones. I was the last person in my entire school to get a cell phone, I think, yet alone a smartphone. I had zero interest in social media or anything. And I know I'm very confident in saying that the second I can delete every single social media, I will. Because I don't like it. And I am done with it the second I can be.
Me too.
There we go.
Yeah, it's like one of those things that you're kind of tied to at the waist.
Uh-huh.
There's very few careers nowadays where having some sort of an online brand like wouldn't help you. Now, like we're the side of the spectrum where it's like borderline essential.
Uh-huh.
And there's certainly like other places where it's less essential but still very beneficial to the people who do, like,
right?
It's just one of those things that sets you apart and it turns everybody into like a little bit of an artist. Like everybody has a little billboard that you can go look at,
yeah,
that's like curated. And I don't know, I think that for people who want to participate in the rat race,
mm-hmm,
you have no choice but to subscribe yourself.
Yeah, it's, I mean, obviously we're pro disc golfers and we're sponsored by MVP, which of course we all love. But there are times where it's like, man, we're making posts. And the good thing is that we really do believe in the product and it's fun. So like what you have to do and what I feel like I have to do, I have to align myself with something I really believe in, because if I'm going to be adding content to the whole content sphere, that at the very least I want to make it something that is the change that I would want myself to see, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
because people are going to be on it anyway. So at least if I can try to up the quality to help people maybe try to think in a little bit different way, or at least consume the content a little differently, or make their day better in some way, rather than, you know, there's a lot of like junk food style content. If I can give you a little bit of nutrition, perhaps, I don't want to say that I'm giving you nutritious content, but
it's like a good
metaphor. That's something I strive to put out rather than just potato chips.
Well, and like to continue on that metaphor, like seeing what happens to people who eat only potato chips.
I mean, that honestly, this is what you can finish this second, but that's why we're doing a podcast.
Yep.
Because I love podcasts, because it kind of exercises my brain in some ways to tell myself, how do I want to think? What about what topic? What about this topic? And it's like, I don't know, I find it pretty cathartic. It's almost like a therapy to do and to listen to. And I find a lot of value from it. I mean, podcasts are kind of the modern day book, if you will.
Yep, the meeting of the minds to create something. They're definitely like less edited, and I think maybe that's for the better. At least it's way more raw, because the kind of necessity for formality is completely gone in this culture, and mostly that's fine. I think it just like strips away all of that. So I think it's... Yeah, I think that's where I think when you see what bad content and like a high dosage of bad content can do to people, I think I would hope that for most people with a platform and a sort of group of people that follow them and influence, notice what bad content can do to people and take a responsibility to try to only input good content into the...
Because there's a lot of good content.
Yep.
There's so much amazing content that will legitimately make you happy out there, and honestly better your life if you consume it in an intentional way. So there's no reason to stoop low and consume junk. Catch yourself when you're consuming junk. Do you have anything to say about that, Simon?
I don't know. I think there's room for all content. Like, even some content that I would consider trash content or bad content. Like, for example, these Netflix dating shows or whatever they're called. Like, yeah, they suck. But at the same time, once you're, like, into them, they're kind of great. So, I don't know. I don't really necessarily judge content for what it is. I think there's room for all of it. And I don't know. I just can't wait for the day where I can throw my phone away.
Flip phone.
I don't like...
I'm stuck on that.
I don't like the fake content. And I don't like the clickbait content. That's like obviously clickbait.
Yeah, there's a definite... There's a new way of writing up thumbnails that drive me
crazy. I'm talking about the stuff that's like the hooks. It's gotten so like primal on Instagram or TikTok now, like the way that like they try to get you to watch their 30-second reel. That's like the content I'm not a fan of, where it's just like literally the only point of the video is to get you to like either comment or hit like or like watch it for its entirety. Its purpose is to generate money for the account. Mm-hmm. So that's what I don't love. But I like any other form of it.
But I love, for example, all that kind of content. I love watching like a YouTube video exactly pointing out how bad those kind of TikTok videos or Instagram videos are. So then again, it's kind of like a benefit that bad content exists, that someone can make fun of it and make it into good content.
Wow. I did not expect that answer from you. So I hereby rescind my position.
Watch whatever you want. If it makes you happy, keep watching it. What's in your heart? But ask, what's in your heart of hearts?
Yeah.
In reality, you should probably get off your phone and go play some disc golf.
Well, I think there was a lot of people who were off their phones playing disc golf. In fact, there was a world record number of people off their phones playing disc golf from a record-breaking number of countries in one tournament in the world.
And what tournament was that?
The Disc Golf World Championships.
And really?
We all played.
Really? I played that?
It's over.
Yeah.
It's been over. I feel like everything that has been said and can be said about that event has been said. Should we still add stuff, you think?
Can we add anything unique that hasn't been said?
Well, I wanted to mention the fact that I think it's interesting that only Evelina got a two-stroke penalty for her incorrect score on hole 18. And if the rule hadn't gotten changed this year, Ella Hansen technically would have won the world championships because the entire lead card would have gotten two-stroke penalty.
Explain. I have no idea that happened.
Did you hear about that?
Explain.
Did you hear about that, Simon?
Yeah. We talked about it like the day of.
Okay, but that seems unique enough to add, doesn't it?
Yeah, that's actually very interesting. So okay. The last hole, Evelina took like a double bogey and everyone only wrote down bogey or
so
something?
So she took a double bogey and everybody only wrote down bogey. She threw OB off the tee, like forehand, and then threw a really incredible second shot. I guess it's third though because of the penalty. And she had like a par save putt, or I guess it's a par five for them. So she had a birdie putt.
Yeah, birdie.
And she airballed it, almost went OB. And instead of like going back and forth a bunch, she like just pitched it under the basket, like really quickly, kind of. Because it was like she was just trying to get out of the way of this playoff that she was like clearly not going to be in. And so she just like tossed it under the basket and then tapped it in and took a six.
Okay.
And I, from the way that I understand it, is that it just got like completely missed by everybody when they went to like say the scores at the end. I don't know. I didn't talk to her. So I'm going to say not maliciously, just like in the heat of the moment. It's the final hole of 18, the regulation of the world championships. Like she just like didn't, we've all done it. She like didn't say the right number and nobody questioned her. And then in a regular scenario, then whenever all four players put in the wrong number, then as you click next, like there would be the error that would pop up saying like the volunteer scorekeeper. And that would cause the group to like kind of come back to this issue and like really go and think about how many throws you took. But I actually talked to the PDGA and the volunteer scorekeeper had his head down just at the right moment and like missed the layup and like didn't record it. And so it got missed. So when they went to submit the five, like it lined up with exactly what that volunteer had. And so it just went right through and nobody noticed. And so but only Evelina was given the extra. So it was a 3-stroke penalty for her because she had to take the 6 plus the 2 strokes. And she's the only one who gets penalized. But like in previous years, you submit an incorrect scorecard. Anybody who submits an incorrect scorecard gets a 2-stroke penalty. So Ella Hansen was...
Holy cannoli!
That would have been the most insane ending to this tournament. I'm glad it didn't happen, honestly. Very glad. That would have been terrible.
So they changed that rule?
Yeah, you're only... So this is the weird part for me. Like, if the three of us are playing on a card, nobody's ever going to call me on this, but technically, I have to watch every single one of your shots. Like, you can get stroked for not watching your card mate shots. And, but if I give you the wrong score, and somehow, like, I mean, obviously we just explained one of the rare ways that it would get all the way through without getting caught. I mean, the PDJ has a pretty, like, foolproof system. It would be pretty hard to get a score without all papers cards to get an incorrect score, like, through and match with yours. But if it happened, only you would get penalized and not me for, like, going along with it. So as the accomplice in your incorrect score, I don't get penalized, but I am required to watch all of your shots to avoid penalty. So pretty interesting.
Which is good, by the way.
No, I agree.
Everyone
with the
getting penalized for that would be terrible.
Yeah, I mean, I think
that's a terrible rule.
What?
If everyone would get penalized for submitting a wrong scorecard of someone else's score.
Sure.
Like, only yourself. You should be the only one responsible for your score to be correct. The fact that we all have to keep score for everyone. Oh my God, I don't even want to start on that.
Yeah.
It's like the biggest. That might be the dumbest rule of all time.
I mean, I think it's just fine for, like.
You miss the old way?
Yes, I miss the old way.
Passing the scorecard every 4 or 5 holes?
Yes.
But didn't you have to score for them too? In those 4 or 5?
Or everyone. If we're a group of 4, I keep score for one guy, the other guy keeps score for the other guy, the other guy for the other guy. So everyone keeps score for one other person on the card. But you are obviously still responsible at the end that your scorecard is correct.
Right. That is fine with me. But I think the app is pretty easy, man. I mean, like, the app is so easy.
Whenever somebody grabs a paper scorecard, I'm like, why?
Why do you do that? No, shout out to the, I criticize the PDJ all the time.
I used to do it.
Their live scoring app setup is really great. And like
with the exception of some annoying bugs.
Yeah, but it's pretty great and it's pretty easy to use. And, you know, stats is a whole other debate about like volunteer scorekeepers, but like for the educated volunteer scorekeeper, it's a pretty easy system to use. The interface is great. And it takes an issue like this where like not a single competitor like even questioned Evelina's 5 because 2 of them are about to go to a playoff for a world title. You know, the other one just humiliated herself.
This is about like one of the only scenarios
that it would get through.
Yeah.
Yes, 100%. Because like there's so much going on. Nobody's questioning the number. And then the volunteer in the commotion just like missed a shot.
So how did it even get caught? Do we know that?
Well, like anybody who watches the live broadcast like knew. Like,
yeah, but how?
So somebody, I don't know like the exact specifics, but I can hypothesize that somebody watching the live broadcast who had the correct number of someone or somebody in production, like somebody who was watching the live feed, whether it was like on staff or somebody just watching or a commentator, somebody notified the right person, was like, oh my gosh, she threw 6 shots. How did nobody see this? That's wrong. And once it's pointed out, I mean, you can't refute. I suppose that's the one time video evidence is used at that point, right?
It can't be used, though.
Well, it can't be used live.
How is that still a rule?
Really annoying.
Yeah, we talked about that, didn't we?
I don't think we have on this
show.
No,
we did, after the Kristen one, where I said that the whole rule of, like, not using video evidence because you don't have, like, you can't do it on every card goes hand in hand then with the marshals. If your card has a marshal, mm-hmm. The marshal overrides all the players. So if your card like has video, a camera, you are entitled to use that if it has the capacity to do so.
Yeah.
I think that's pretty straightforward.
Did you hear that the rule got passed that we now have time extensions?
Yeah, I was going to say we should talk about that.
That got passed?
We should talk about the
that
new rules.
That got passed. I can't believe that got passed.
I hear it in your tone that you don't think that's good.
No, I think it's terrible.
It's
so dumb.
That was my idea for a long time.
Well,
but why? You think someone should say like call out extension during the round and then they get like another 40 seconds or something?
If you're in a really terrible spot
And that can justify, say, somebody having a tough time that would normally get a penalty called on them. And then once they have the time extension called, hypothetically, you can be more strict now that you already had your extension. That's the concept I like. Probably, hopefully, what I just laid out is what will happen, but I can see it getting muddied really easily. But in on paper,
what if you land in a bad spot two or three times during the round?
Well, then you're, do you get one or two time extensions?
Two.
Then your third one, you better be quick. Your card mates better be on your behind and tell you to move faster. You've already been having a tough one, and you can't. You gotta take your medicine now. You step up and you throw.
No, they should have completely gotten rid of the 30-second rule. There's zero time rules because they're dumb, and you just have to keep up with the card in front of you. That's the only rule that has to be in place. That's the only thing that matters. You can't cause backups. And if you do, you're going to get warned. And you're going to have a marshal to walk with your card to make sure you guys are playing properly.
Maybe
like
that,
Gannon.
Maybe that's the next evolution.
Gannon on the last shot, his upshot to win the World Championships. He took almost a minute on that.
Yeah.
What was it? Like a 100-foot upshot? 120-foot upshot?
Right.
Which he totally should take as much time as he humanly wants in that moment, because there's no cards behind him and he can't back up anyone, and it's the biggest shot of his life. So the fact that the 30-second rule is still in effect in that moment, is it just makes so zero sense that I can't even express how dumb I think it is. And the fact, like, why didn't no one call him there? There were marshals all around and he clearly took a minute. Like, well, why did no one call him? I don't get it.
Because the sport does not want to place, like, it's a sport where, like, all the rules are stated, but, like, nobody follows them as competitors. And so then if the league chooses to enforce it, it's always going to be, like, almost always going to be under a spotlight. And it's going to affect, like, the outcome of a tournament. And I don't know. It's like that field goal kicker mentality. Like if field goal kickers in the NFL, like, you only notice them if they do bad things.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the same with, like, the PDGA. Like, it's just like, I don't think anybody wants to. I mean, we all saw what happened at Champions Cup, and nobody wants to repeat that.
Yeah, exactly.
So, like, nobody's going to do that. Because it's not consistent.
Then get rid of the bad rule.
Well, so, like, that's what they did. So simple to me. They even changed.
No, they made it almost worse. Because now you have this weird extension rule that just makes everything worse, because it doesn't change the problem. It just adds more confusion and things we're not going to ever call.
So it says, when making a throw from the teeing area, a drop zone, or within 20 meters of the target, the player has 30 seconds to throw. And when making a throw from any other lie, the player has 45 seconds. So they extended 15 seconds to, like, any...
Every throw?
Every throw that isn't a teeing area or a putt. To, like, all of your shots in between. All your shots.
And then on top of that, you get two extensions?
Yeah.
And that's in effect...
And then they're, like, making clarifications here to, like, when the timer starts. So, and
this is in effect now?
No, for next year, I think. Okay. Right? Or is it?
Yeah, it's got to be. It's got to be.
Yeah,
next
updated
year.
Updated rules of disc golf and competition manual for disc golf events for 2026. Changes to go into effect January 1st.
Then, hey, just so I can say this real quick, I could be totally wrong, and it's a great rule change, but I just don't feel that way in this moment.
I mean, sometimes.
I think that you should. You should have 5 seconds to throw any shot. You step up and you throw. That's everybody.
I agree.
I mean, I saw something recently in a golf tournament where, like, one of the players got, like, a warning or a penalty from one of the marshals, and his, like, reasoning literally was that he wasn't keeping pace with the group in front of him. That was, like, their ruling.
Yeah, I mean, everyone hates slow play in any sport. And they just made, with these rule changes, they just made disc golf slower. And that is exactly what we don't need. We need disc golf to be faster in every way possible because, I mean, I'm the biggest disc golf fan in the freaking world, probably. And I find it very difficult to sit through a 3.5-4 hour live stream round of disc golf. Like, it's just too slow.
We need to go back to the days of no phones when our attention spans can handle it. Courses, back to the 70s.
Courses need to be shorter. We need to play in twosomes or threesomes.
Threesomes, please, please.
Oh, that would be amazing. Yeah, tee off every like 7 minutes, 7 minute increments with threesomes.
Maybe we should just start our own tournament and just all the rules apply that we like and then we see what happens.
Our rules are no rules.
Smaller baskets, threesomes, faster play, and no trees in the middle of the fairway.
I love it. Join our tour. Starting 2040.
No, I'll get a tour event one of these days.
I mean, you have one.
Yeah, that doesn't count.
You just have to put your foot down and be like, all right, we're putting in my rules now.
You had the chance at the preserve. This could have been like, this is my event. Literally.
I don't think the title sponsor gets to act that way, but
I don't know who would be able to stick it to the tour and be like, you're going to have our event. Well, you wouldn't be able to stick it to the tour. It would be its own thing. And you would have to convince the players to come.
Simon Says by Simon Line. That's a good tournament.
Yeah. No, I just want to like partner up maybe with 3 or 4 other top players. And we can throw a little budget together and just run one event a year that's just different and see what happens. Mm-hmm. Maybe it catches on.
Yeah. I think it can be like an idea place to try some things out, the testing grounds. You know, that's something that I wish that one of my favorite sports, baseball, which is introducing a lot of new rules and ways to make the game faster and more entertaining and just like lots of different things. They test it all in the minor leagues. They have an entire league where they test everything. And basically, it's their guinea lab where they figure out if these rules are going to make sense. And I think that it would be great for the Disc Golf Pro Tour to either use the Q Series for something like that or All-Star Weekend. Is that Wendy on a Tesla?
I thought you were a McDonald's guy.
Is that really a Tesla?
It is. Yeah, you were right.
That's great. So I think it'd be cool. I just wish, I want the Pro Tour to have a process, like an event where they can test out ideas.
Yeah, I always thought it'd be cool in the off season if they wanted to continue some events down in Florida. You could have like the DGPT X series where it's like they're considering some new changes in rules or baskets or whatever for the coming season. And it's the brainstorm of events. It'd be really cool to just try new things out. But everyone from the Pro Tour is probably so burnt out after the year. So it's like, if anyone's listening, like, please no, don't subject us to that. So
yeah,
it's got to be someone else, I think, unfortunately.
Yep.
It's got to be us.
Yeah. I mean, I think to anybody like who is listening, who is like looking at any of these things as like, you know, something they want to see, I don't think it's that, you know, out of this world if you like go and dedicate yourself to doing something in that scope. Like, let's say you're listening and you're like, man, I really believe in this small basket argument. If you had the right resources and the right design experience, I mean, you could actually probably make something and market it to the right people. Like, it's not that far-fetched in this industry. That somebody.
Didn't we had someone reach out.
Oh, we had someone reach out for sure. Yeah, he was great. Yeah, if I had the time, I would still be using that group chat.
We're all bark, no bite.
Well, think we're busy traveling every week.
We're slightly busy.
I just like the idea of a smaller basket. I don't know how to actually do it.
I want someone else to do it for me.
That's so the story just like of my give life. You the design and then you just look at it?
Yeah. I want to be the one using it, not making it.
Well, you have to be the change.
Exactly.
We need like a mini Mach X.
Yeah.
I think that might work. That like a work. Mach X, but as like a marksman style. I think we're on to
let
something.
Let me adjust what you just said, Simon. We need a mini portal.
Oh, yeah, good point. You're right.
Oh.
Yeah, I think it would be helpful for some putting. So
no, I would. I'm not. Let's not go into the small basket discussion right now. Everything has been said.
We can talk. We could have a whole series about that in the off season. Is there anything else we want to mention about Worlds?
It was interesting to try and figure out what was the conversation between Ida and her dad. I don't know. I like heard through like two different people that he like gave an interview and said that he miscounted, and I don't know if that's actually true.
I heard that the PDGA app said the wrong score for Own.
Yeah. I heard that too, and I asked the PDGA, I asked Andy Rothschild, and he was like, dude, I was right there, and I was watching, and it was not, like, wrong. So, okay. I trust Andy on that. But
rumors out there.
Well, I mean, that's the kind of thing that can happen when something like that happens, and then everybody's saying something. So, I will just say that it was curious, or interesting for me, to try and watch and interpret what might have happened. Like, what might have gone wrong there?
We'll never know.
Do you know what, like, where, like, how she laid up?
Yeah.
Just, like, kind of surprisingly laid up.
She threw her third shot OB.
Yep.
And she was...
She had to make the putt.
She was, like, 40 or... I think 40 is a little close. Maybe, like, 50.
I think 45.
40 to 50.
It was, like healthy circle, too, but like not edge.
Like, a putt that... A range where... You're thinking about making it, especially her, how well she was putting all week.
Yeah.
And Own didn't miss a single putt the entire last round, so you can't bank on her missing that.
Right. Well, and I mean, I don't think she, like, I find it really hard to believe that even if she said it in an interview or like in a post, like that she did it on purpose. Like,
right.
I have a hard time believing that.
Whatever happened to her credit, that, like, the amount of roller coaster she had ridden up until that point, and especially she just did a whole loop-de-loop on that shot. So, like, I don't think the best decision making is happening right then and there.
But shout out to freaking FPO, dude. That must have been like top three most fun I've ever had watching a round of disc golf.
It was
everything.
I didn't really care about my final round, and I was teeing off and had my phone in hand watching the final round. It was unbelievable.
It really was.
And it's unbelievable because it's unpredictable. That's why. Like, and it's weird because it's like, I would say that, especially this week, there was a lot of like kind of giving it up. Like the lead for the world championships, like with like, I don't know, 21 holes to go was minus 15. Mm-hmm. And the winning score was minus 10, minus 11. Mm-hmm. So there was a lot by Henna, by Evelina, by Own and Ida. They all had moments where they really like gave the field a chance to come back, and I just think that there's less consolidation at the top and the skill level, and especially when you didn't have, you know, Missy shot herself out of the tournament in the first round, Kristen DNF'd, Holland like wasn't really relevant through most of the tournament, and so it was a lot of inconsistently good golf, and it just makes FPO so unpredictable because I don't know, it just seems like you have no idea like who it, like a Kevin Jones at Portland Open, which is like one of those rare like last second choke jobs, is just like so unheard of in MPO, like where you just like blow up out of nowhere.
It used to be a thing.
It's just not. I don't know. I feel like the closers are
now.
Just...
Imagine what small baskets could do to MPO. Like imagine Gannon or Ricky or Calvin being 20 feet from the basket and there's a legit chance they could miss. Like it just makes golf so much better when not 95% of every putt is made.
Sure. But I think like FPO, just like it's not just the putting that like causes the blowups. I mean, it's just like, I mean, Ida's entire world championships came down to the fact that she couldn't execute the second shot on hole 16 at the Beast for the fourth round. And, you know, if she had shot even par the rest of the week, she would have won, or like the rest of the day and the next day. And I think that it's like less about those one stroke swings and it's more about like those no lead is safe. I mean, then the next week
she got a 13, right?
Yeah. And then Silva,
if she
had
got
like
a 10, she would have won.
Silva. Yeah. Right. Henna, dude, it's stuff like this. Henna Blomroos gained. Oh my gosh. Oh, Ida went whatever 13, which is nine over.
I saw these stats.
She went nine over.
Yeah.
And Henna went five down.
Uh huh.
So Henna got 14 strokes on Ida in the final four holes of the fourth round. Like you just don't. You're not. You would never see that in FPO playing out for the win. Like you could see a leader choke
or
and fall way back
MPO,
into
you
the.
Mean?
Yeah, sorry, in MPO, you can see a leader choke now maybe, and like Anthony did at European Open.
Uh-huh.
But it doesn't, like, there's going to be somebody who was one stroke behind that person.
Yeah. Like,
or two,
if
or
you
three,
start,
or
if,
four
if,
people.
If someone starts, like, blowing up early in the round, they get forgotten about so fast because there's a whole horde coming.
Right.
Coming
you never see these, like, seven stroke leads between, like,
and
first
get,
and
it,
second
it, they
place.
They kind of get camouflaged in, too.
Yeah.
Because there's five or six people who are popping off every single round.
Yeah, it's nuts. So just totally unpredictable. I think that like, well, let's just say it's obvious like from anybody who's watching that like FPO is, you know, a side of our sport that like is definitely like underappreciated and under supported. And it's just like part of how it's always been in disc golf. And I think that it's good for FPO that it is a more like storyline shifting version of the sport than MPO because it's more entertaining for the average fan. And I hope that every tournament can end like that for FPO. Like the more tournaments that end like that for the women, the better.
Mm-hmm.
And same with even like Kristen at Estonia. Like those are so dramatic. Like I guess both the wins in Estonia were dramatic, but it just seems like Calvin's putt to win it is a lot rarer. In the world of MPO.
I will go, Gannon, you always knew that he was the guy lurking and he was probably going to do it. But I thought it was pretty interesting the whole way. Because even on, I mean, there was a little bit of an opportunity on 17 and 18. Like, it wasn't in the bag for Gannon the whole time.
Oh, dude, a couple of guys could have had it.
Like, it's easy to say, like, of course Gannon's going to win it. But, I mean, you're going after your first world title with all that pressure on you. And you are just locked in, willing your way to victory that whole tournament. I mean, I don't care that he's a four-time major champion. He's the best player in the world. But to do it on that stage and be so tenacious, I still have to commend him and just say congratulations. Like, it's pretty unreal.
Yeah, I think calling it like boring and predictable is like even a compliment to him. It just like shows
right.
it shows how impressive he is consistently. We just all expect it at this point.
Like, people are giving him credit, but they're not giving him enough credit, I think. That's my perspective.
I mean, he's Tom Brady. People are already tired of seeing him win.
Right, right.
He's 1061 rated now.
1061.
That means his average is our good.
Is that the all tied the all time high?
1062 is the 1062. High by Macbeth.
Just crazy. Imagine your average is 1060 golf. Like, if you shoot a 1060, you're like, yeah, that was pretty dang good.
Yeah, I was happy with my round.
And that's for him just average. I cannot relate how that's possible. I guess I've watched it many times, but...
So, we had a great week. I do want to just kind of mention, this is a topic I wanted to discuss with both of you, is just sort of acknowledging the future of Tampere major disc golf tournaments. I don't know, like, what's really been talked about much in the public scene, but it became quite apparent to me when I was there that there's not really, like, a succession plan in that area of Finland to kind of, like, fill and follow the steps that UC has paved out. And obviously, I think the PDGA has shifted a lot of their kind of focus to the Estonian crew. And not at all, like, affected by UC's decision to kind of be done after this tournament. And so I want both of your thoughts on if you've put any thought into that and what you think about the future of tournaments being held in Tampere, in that city, because it's been there now for 20 years.
Yeah, Simon might know more than me, but I'm kind of out of the loop with what UC has planned, but I've heard that he said, my work here is done. And I don't think there is any plan. The premier disc golf event in Finland moving forward is probably the Turku Open under Seppo's rule. So I don't really know. I know that people are running... There's a lot of great tournament staffs in Finland that would probably step up and do something. But as far as Tampere Disc Golf Center, I literally have no clue what the future holds.
Yeah, I don't really know either, of course. But from the things I've gathered last week, I was listening to the Upshot. Charlie was talking about the TV numbers of live viewers of that final round, and they were in the high hundreds of thousands people watching live in Finland. I think it was like 700,000 ish.
I mean, I saw a graphic on Instagram that was like 1.3 million. That's the one I kept seeing shared.
Yeah, all combined, I think that was the view count or something, but tuned in live was like 700,000. It was like, the number was like 12% or something of Finnish population was watching disc golf on Sunday.
I talked to a couple,
which is nuts,
on the plane coming back, who is an American couple doing a tour through Finland, and they asked me what I did, and I told them I played disc golf, and they said, you know, we had never, and these were Americans, they were like, we had never heard of that until last week when we were in Finland and we were doing this like bike trip, and every place that we went into on Sunday had disc golf, this weird thing we had never seen on the TV. So we finally asked somebody in like the fourth place what this weird sport was, and they explained it to us that it was the World Championships. And so it was this like elderly American couple that had been bombarded by disc golf on their tourism trip across Finland, and they had seen it so many times.
That's how you get them.
I mean, it's just, that shows you how widespread it was. I mean, that's part of that live viewership, right? I mean, like, just because the TV and the account are on that channel doesn't necessarily always mean that it's like an individual set of eyes staring back at it.
You never know how it's going to stick or hit with somebody.
It could be, but it's like so many of those are like bars and restaurants.
A guy came up to me, he's like, you're the reason I got into disc golf. I'm like, okay, how did that happen? He's like, I was scrolling YouTube and I saw your disc golf anime opening you made, and I thought it was hype and it got me interested.
Wait, your fission dimension?
No.
Oh.
Like during COVID, I made a anime opening to Silhouette, which is like a song that they use for a Naruto opening.
Oh.
And he was an anime fan. He just saw it and he's like, I thought it was really hype. So I checked out Disc Golf after it and I got hooked.
Wow.
So I was like, that's actually really cool. I would have never guessed that this would introduce anybody into disc golf.
So where are you going with that point, Simon?
I was going with that. I mean, I always used to say back in the day when people would ask me like why I'm with Discmania and what how do I see my future there and why UC and all those things, and I always said like I turned down other opportunities that offered me more money at the time, but I always said I'm sticking with UC because I thought that if there's ever going to be something big, like a big sponsorship, a big brand deal, something big in disc golf, taking it to the next level, it was going to happen through UC. And I think, even though this was possibly UC's last hurrah, I think this possibly opened doors to that next step, at least in Finland, because I mean those kind of numbers are what big brands look at and they start being like, oh, this is what disc golf could be at its best. Let's try to give it a little push and see what we can do. Like, there's really no reason not to, and I mean, just on this level, it's never been done. With those kind of numbers, obviously, it's completely, it's like just miles above what we do usually, even yeah. Our bigger events.
Do you think it's a bluff?
So I don't know. I think there's a chance that this thing opened doors. I don't know, but I think there's definitely a chance because why not?
Do you think it's like, do you think he's for real on his statement of being done? Or do you think, like, because I've talked to a lot of people who are like, oh, he just says that he'll be back in 5 years. Or do you think he's like actually really done?
You can't say for sure. I think.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
I think we're not going to get into it, but the last couple of years have been kind of crazy for UC. And he needs some time away because with Discmania, with Worlds, there's just been so much going on. And honestly, he probably wants at least 2 to 5 years to recalibrate. But I mean, 5 years from now, he could be like, I'm back, baby. I want Worlds again in Tampa Bay. So you never know. Long term, it would not surprise me. I think he will come back, but just he deserves some time away and he needs to do what he needs to do.
Yeah, a spectacular tournament, the Black Party, which was my first one that I've ever attended, was pretty epic. And they had, how do you say his name right, Darude?
He was there.
You didn't go?
I can't believe Eagle wasn't there. It was insane.
I was in. I had a flight the next day.
Dude, they had Darude. He played Sandstorm.
Are you freaking kidding me?
UC got him out. He played like a full set. That's how
it was the craziest thing I've ever seen.
That's how
I
know that. This is how you know Eagle's not on Instagram at all, because that was literally everybody's story for the next 2 days. Was Darude playing Sandstorm at the Black Party? That was everyone's Instagram. Somehow, like, if you hadn't gone, you would have seen.
Somehow you just ruined my day by telling me that. Wow.
Okay. You didn't, I can't believe you didn't know that.
Okay. I won European Open 2022, and they got rid of the Black Party for a while, and it came back in 2022, and it was terrible. I'm sorry. Everyone was saying, like, how bad this Black Party was. And then the next year, it was a little bit better, but it was still kind of meh. So I just figured it was going to be a flop.
Wait, so did you go last year?
What was last year? I think I went last year.
I didn't go last year.
It was crazy. No, this one, I also went in with very low expectations. I actually, unfortunately, even though I find it epic that UC hired one of the most famous DJs in freaking the world, and definitely the most famous Finnish guy.
He's considered the most famous Finnish musical artist.
I see that.
Yeah, I mean, that song probably has billions of streams. Even I know it, and I don't like clubs or
EDM.
Electronical music, EDM. And even I have heard of this song. Like, it's so famous. Like, even someone who doesn't like it knows it. But I don't know. I understand why there had to be obviously many people there, and it was a huge party, but I don't know. The Black Party has always been like player exclusive. So you can like go.
It wasn't
player
exclusive?
I mean, it was pretty much. It was like all.
No, Joey. It was like 80% not players there. Yeah. 80%.
It was like the players got like a pass, and then I'm sure it was like included for like any like. I don't think it was like, you think it was straight up fans? I don't think it was like random fans. I don't think it was like.
No, some VIP passes had access.
Right.
And then it was mostly like the volunteers
and the vendors
and the staff.
And the everybody who was involved. Yeah, because that's like something that Worlds can offer as like a reward to all these people for like all their months of like, you know, free labor that they put in. And it's the same incentive that Estonia uses to shut down the course every event day so the pros can't go and practice, which I remember being like a point of contention every year in Estonia. But it's because they're letting the volunteers like play the course for the one time they can play it all year. So I like, yes, it bothers.
No, I get it.
And it sucks mainly for guys like you. Like for guys like me, it doesn't matter because those guys don't want to come talk to me. I can just like walk around and they're just like bodies in the building. For you, they're like moths to a flame.
I could not take a step without someone screaming into my face because the music was so loud. Obviously, people were drinking, and I literally had to leave multiple times because I could not handle the situation.
I remember.
I was max level uncomfortable.
I remember driving you home that night.
Everything about it.
You were not happy that night driving home. You escaped.
Did somebody try to steal your hat?
I mean, it was a glorified meet and greet. It was like a signing session, just with really loud music and drunk people spitting into my face. I just absolutely couldn't handle it.
Yep.
I was mind blown that the Black Party turned into that, which usually was just player exclusive and you could actually like wind down and talk to some friends you didn't really see all week because everyone was so busy with their game. But no, it was not what I was looking for, but at the same time I can happily say that it was a great party and epic for everyone else.
Well, the problem is that you represent a target audience that's very hard to cater to. Like, that's the problem with the people at the top. Like, the top, top, top. Like, because we're all pros technically, but like, not every pro shares that same burden and reward of like having so much fan base that they have an amazing career and opportunity from it, but also like can't step a foot anywhere inside a place that isn't like exclusive to players. Like a steak night is one where you can actually be yourself, because that's like only players. Sometimes there's like one or two friends, but for the most part it's like only players, so you can at least like relax.
Correct. That only players, that's where I'll be hanging out.
But for everybody else, it was like an epic experience, even for lower level players like myself.
I want to see Darud, but my day got a little less bad after Simon's reigns.
Well,
no, Eagle,
you would have
absolutely hated it. You would have hated it.
It would have been fine.
No, Eagle would have hated it. Once the Darud started, it was okay because everyone was so busy like going
everybody's
crazy.
Everybody's attention that, like, went to him.
To the next famous guy.
He was the most famous guy
in the room.
Everyone put their target
next to Darud, Simon Lazard is nobody.
Well, at that point, it just turned into like a total nightclub, like lights and smoke. Like you couldn't really see much anymore. It was just like, it was actually insane. It was like a legit, like, That was probably the craziest party that I've ever been to, because I'm not really someone seeking out clubs like that.
When it was a surprise, nobody knew that was happening. And then, like, when some people, like, heard the name or saw, like, who it was, they, like, realized right away. And then everybody else is, like, looking around, like, wait, why do some people recognize this guy? Like, what? Who is this guy? And then he, like, starts playing that song. And, like, all of a sudden, then some more people start to get it. And then you can see, like, all the people who already knew, they're just losing their minds. And then there's people who still, like, are, like, trying to figure out what's going on. And then as, like, the chorus hits, everybody's like, oh, my God, like, this is who this is?
That was pretty special.
Very special. So I'm curious to see. So, like, I think you're right, Simon. The excitement for disc golf in the Tampere area has never been higher. The tidal wave that UC has created with 20 years of buildup is massive. And obviously we're losing the Beast to an expansion of that facility.
It's slightly up in the air, I hear.
Which one? The Beast?
The Beast.
Oh.
I've heard mixed things about that.
So I also...
And even if it is, it's like you lose two and three.
Yeah, I don't...
Like, there's probably...
Thank God.
There's got to be some way to figure something out. Like, if you play hole 10, like 10 and 11, if you look right, there is more space there that you could do something, if they wanted to do something. A lot of people are okay with it being gone. The interviews that were taking place by Pulsea Disc Golf Academy.
That media zone was cool.
It was something else. Let's just say that.
Yeah,
my dad loved those interviews because they were probably the funniest interviews you could ever get out of disc golfers.
Yes.
Yeah. And the last question I got from them was, are you going to miss the Beast? And everybody on my card basically said no.
I don't think I'm going to miss it.
I am so not going to miss it.
Yeah, So I don't have the nostalgia factor, right? That's, like, you know, big thing there for me. I don't have the, like, history with the place that some of the older players do. But, yeah, I think there's some good holes. I think the spectating environment on the last three holes is solid. But it certainly, like, doesn't strike me as like a place that, like, can't be improved upon. And I mean, Tampere is, like, getting potentially some rail work done, but that would only affect, like, the tee of hole one, so it's gonna go, like, next to the
thank
road.
Goodness.
I birdied hole one. I love that hole now.
So I think the courses, like, are, like, potentially going to be, at least Tampere is going to be intact, and the excitement is high, but I wonder, like, no matter, like, all of those intangibles, the momentum that it's got, at the end of the day, you still need someone like UC to, like, take on the project of putting on these events. I say this time and time again that disc golf is one of those sports, especially on the local league and tournament level, 90% of the community gets to enjoy the fruits of the labor of, like, 10% of these event organizers and directors who just, like, work so hard to put these events on and basically make no money doing it. And so we all want good events, but event running is just not, like, all it's cracked up to be. So somebody has to voluntarily, like, want to, for the love of the game, like, step in and replace UC Maresma. Like, that seems impossible to me. The network that he had and the connections and the history, it's just, like, it seems like the hardest task to try to do in disc golf if you were passionate about keeping elite events in that area.
Well said.
Yeah, he was a doer.
He was tireless.
He was.
He never stopped doing things, and he knew everyone. He could put out every fire. And I really wonder, yeah, I mean, you obviously have, like, the attention of the country. So I'm really curious to see if, like, is it going to be people under UC who, like, you know, picks a leader out of that group of the people who worked right below him?
Seppo Pio.
Is it going to be a new tournament? Is it going to be Seppo or the guys at Heinola Disc Golf World or somewhere else? Is it going to be like the PDGA, like taking an invested interest into it? Whatever it is.
Or is it going to be you? Yes, you, the Finnish listener.
The Finnish
right now.
Listener. It could be. I think it is. I think for, if you are a listener and you're Finnish or you like Finnish disc golf, I do think that the success of future Finnish disc golf depends on somebody like that continuing to bring high quality events to the country.
Is it going to be you, Joey?
No, but I hope somebody does it. I don't speak Finnish.
Not yet.
If the Finnish government, if I spoke Finnish and the Finnish government, or there was like a way to do it, I would do it. Because I think that's important. It's very important. Finland is like where our sport is growing right now. And there's so many young kids who just got really excited about this game because they saw it on television. And so did like almost a million other people. I don't know. It's just like, it just feels like this guy has like guided us all the way to the promised land. And then like, we're like, and now he's just gone. And we lost our captain of our great ship. And now we have to like try to sail on without him on the ship that he built.
Period.
Period.
Tuzuku. Tuzuku.
It's a good podcast name, period.
Or to be continued, question mark?
The Illinois boys.
Oh, all right. Should we wrap it up with your thoughts about Ledgestone right now or what?
Yeah, we were, Eagle and I were talking about Ledgestone whenever we filmed the practice round. We filmed the practice round.
Yeah, practice round. It was Paul Kranz, Joey Tamale, and myself. The boys filmed.
Joey was playing?
Joey's playing. The boys filmed the practice round. It was like the old days. We were just out there making it happen. I was filming shots. Paul was filming shots. Of course, Joey was filming shots.
We were yucking and chucking.
And, you know, Joey's out there providing a unique perspective on the round. That was his niche that he was filling all round. And that should be coming out pretty soon.
Mm-hmm.
Today or tomorrow, I imagine. So.
Did you film Northwood or Eureka?
Oh, Eureka.
Oh, come on. We have some self-respect.
What? What do you mean?
I literally think that the goal of Ledgestone Insurance Open... I mean, we started this podcast off by talking about how this place that we stay is like one of the reasons we like this tournament. And this is nothing to be said like really against any of the people involved because I respect most of them and I think they do a great job.
I want to say... what I appreciate about this tournament.
Let's start there.
I feel like this is the most American tournament.
Okay.
We're out there driving through cornfields. We're looking at the schedule. We're seeing ice cream socials. We're seeing Midwest Italian restaurants. You're seeing people on tractors, trucks, and it's hot. It's sweaty. But these people are from the Midwest, and they're enjoying summer. They're looking forward to coming out to Ledgestone Insurance Open. They've put it on the calendar all year, and it's a very exciting time for them, and I respect that.
Yep.
And I feel like I'm tapping into that energy, and I appreciate it. They put a lot of hard work out here at Northwood and Lake Eureka, mm-hmm. and I am excited to eat the fruits of their labor.
Nate Heinold has built a fantastic empire in the disc golf world. He supported the tour since its inception in 2015, one of the original supporters. They give away record amounts of money to charity every year, to St. Jude. They obviously pushed the boundary of the sport with the creation and modification of Northwood's Black. And then obviously... I mean, when I started coming to this, it was a small insurance company that Nate ran. And now it's become a disc golf retailer, warehouse, content, machine.
I still say insurance open. Is the insurance, there's no more insurance.
I was going to ask at the beginning, I was going to cut you off, but I figure I cut people off enough on this podcast.
I still don't, I still think there's insurance.
Maybe part of
Ledgestone. I think Ledgestone is just discs now.
I know, but it's just crazy how it's not at all involved with the insurance company at all. It's like a completely separate. It all started with Nate's, like, from the support of Nate's insurance company, and just pretty crazy where it's gone to. And yeah, I think, you know, it is good for the AM experience, the way that they release all those exclusive discs, and there is AMside happening, right?
Oh, it's massive.
It's massive. This like tournament, massive
there's tournament. Like 156 players in open. I tee off at 9:06 in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
It's wild.
What?
I tee off at 2:26.
James, last time I looked, James Conrad was the first tee time at 7:36 because FPO is on separate course. So it's just a whole spread of people playing throughout the day at Eureka and Northwood.
Yeah, so there's a lot of like positive things that exist with this event. For me, however, my favorite part of it is staying here at this place, and I honestly don't hate Lake Eureka. I like throwing some of the shots, and I like being by the water. It makes me feel like I'm not in the middle of the Midwest.
It's pretty. The back. What is it? Six or seven holes are fun.
It's about as pretty as it can get here. Northwoods for me is like, can I get through each round and still find some amount of motivation to keep playing this game competitively full time? And it is such a different approach, and for me this year I'm just like not physically in the place to expect great things out there.
Can you share with us what your father Mike Tamale said to you? You shared with me yesterday. I thought that was so hilarious.
Oh my gosh. Well, so my dad doesn't know a ton about disc golf, but what he knows is through me. And he follows along on the app, and he watches some of my rounds in person, but pretty limited. And he likes a lot of other sports. And he tells me all the time, like, man, son, you played I love you, I support you, but boy, did you just pick a brutal, brutal sport to compete in. He's like, it's just crazy how much suffering you have to do for this thing that you call a game. And he's like, and no matter how good you do it, you could have done it one better. And he's like, my favorite thing about tennis is that if I mishit my first serve, I get a second serve right away, and nobody ever remembers that I mishit my first serve ever. Like, you get free mulligans, and then if you get blown out in one tennis game, 40 love, you can come back and win the next one. It like resets, the score resets every time.
You know what? They get time extensions. How about we get two free mulligans now? I like that. That'd be amazing.
No, they're not free. You got to pay like $50 into some pot.
The mulligan pot?
There's a mulligan pot, and whoever used the least mulligans at the end gets the pot.
When we make our tour, we're going to do that, okay?
So...
or whoever used... No. Okay, yeah, sorry. I was trying to make it make sense, but it doesn't.
So whoever, you know, I think... whoever can battle the woods the most is going to have like the best chance on Sunday. We play this middle.
That's not true though. The person who's they're not battling the woods if they're playing good out there. You're going to be right in the middle of the fairway. They're going to be shredding. And like if Ezra pops off or someone does like an Ezra-like round from the monster, it's like there's no battling there. That's pure fun and like filleting lines. Chances are we're going to be battling the woods.
Yeah. Yeah, we are. You and me are going to be battling. And it's going to be a matter of, you know, do we give up or do we persevere? And I do think I was talking with Dan Schlitter earlier, and we talked about how if you were to be parting for birdie, inside circle two on every par three off the tee, and throwing with a run up from every landing zone on the par fours, that would be like one of the best throwing days of your life or your season.
Yeah.
So given that logic, it is inevitable that you are going to be put in spots that you have not practiced. And so there is some amount of scrambling that you're going to have to execute. But I do believe that you're right. The person who gets put in those situations the least mm-hmm. is going to be the person who wins.
100%.
For sure. So
you're playing Northwoods tomorrow?
No, Eureka, then two rounds at Northwoods.
Ah.
Is there a cut?
All right, well.
Yeah, for sure.
For sure?
I don't know. I hope so.
I don't know if there is. This might be a weird exception.
Don't make
I'll be
me
rooting
do
you on from the comfort of my living room.
Yeah, okay.
It's Ledgestone's a great event to watch.
Yes.
It's probably the best event to watch, honestly.
It's like watching a marathon on TV where you just
it's like,
watching
the Tour de France.
Yes, it is like watching the Tour de France. You're just like, man, that is so impressive what those guys are doing. And then they're like, would you be wanting to do that?
You're like,
No way.
I'll never do that.
No chance.
That's a good episode name, the Tour de France of disc golf.
The Tour de France of disc golf. It truly would be, I think.
All right.
We did it.
Do you want to do a quick fantasy update just because Jeremiah is the GOAT for keeping up with it?
Yeah, he is the GOAT. He still sends us stuff every week. Even though obviously we're not touching on it as much, but I'll give you the briefest of updates. After Worlds, we have Simon and Joey distancing themselves from the bird. Eagle is at 8,027 points. Simon in second at 9,068.
I got both winners. Let's just give me that at least.
Yeah, you got both winners, and somehow you like didn't score.
I didn't score. I think I lost points. Sometimes.
No, you score. You got points on both of us this week, but not by a lot. I guess I did well somehow. Anyway, Simon at 9,068, so 1,000 points clear of Eagle, and me at 9,350. So we do have a battle for first and second. We'll probably touch back on that after MVP Open.
Well, Joey, you lost Kristen, right? Now, basically, maybe for the rest of the year?
Is that what she said?
Oh, yeah. I don't know. I'm just guessing.
No, Ratana told me today that she's not coming back till Throw Pink and Pro Tour Finals.
What?
Oh, wow. That'll hurt, and I'm going to catch you.
Gosh, that's not good. I mean, Ella saved my FPO.
Guys, Team MVP Silva Saarinen won
the Turku Open.
The Pro Tour last weekend. Oh. We need to give a shout out real quick.
Another
sick in the playoff.
Another example of how dramatic FPO can be. She had a 6-stroke lead going into the final round, and she won it in a playoff.
She likes her wins stressful.
Amazing.
Yeah, you can tell she was like, you can tell in the interview that she was embarrassed to have almost choked. She was like, thank God I did not lose that. That seemed to be her expression, answering every question. At least, like, the tone of her voice. But, yeah.
And shout out Raven Newsom, who was leading the tournament after round one.
Raven has continued to shoot good rounds off the bat at big events in Europe. He played good in Estonia and Worlds and Turku. Like, really good first rounds.
He was in the mix to win
Krukul.
Mm-hmm.
He's the opposite of me.
He's somebody who's
good round ones.
He's somebody who has dealt with a lot of like injury related adversity and really kind of come out the positive side of it, really put in a lot of training and become a stronger, better, more agile, further throwing version of himself as a result. And also getting married in the process. I've got a lot of respect for him and his amazing wife, Sarah, who's part of the MVP Open organizing group. I don't know if you guys knew that, but
I did know that.
I didn't know that she was that.
Yeah, she was always part of that $1 million shot thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she actually does a lot to run the... She has 3 different jobs to help support that crew. 2 remote. No, all 3 are remote.
Shout out to the Newsoms.
Shout out to the Newsoms.
That could be a podcast name.
I don't know if it's the Newsomes, though. Did she change? I don't know if she changed her last name.
I bought a griddle last week, guys.
A griddle?
A griddle or a grill?
Yeah. I bought a griddle. I debated for months, basically, what I need because, I mean, I own this house now and I don't have a grill.
Is it Blackstone?
It's a Blackstone griddle. And, I mean, just for many, many reasons, I chose the griddle over the grill.
What's the difference?
It's much more versatile. A griddle is basically like a huge cast iron skillet
like
that
a
you
huge
cook
flat
outside
top.
With.
Like what they
oh,
would
like
use
an industrial cookie.
Yeah.
Okay.
Burgers, steaks, you can cook almost anything on it.
Pancakes, bacon, stir fries. Like you can really do anything. It's like a pan just outside and larger.
Okay.
So, can I try it at MVP Open?
Yeah, I was thinking about steak night already.
Wow.
And we've used it almost every day now for a week, and it's been really fun, and I'm happy with it. And they only cost like $300, so it felt like a really good bang for your buck.
I can't wait to eat it.
So it's like a plug-in, plug-in one, or is it like installed into your counter?
No, it's gas. It has like a propane tank, and I mean, it's kind of like a gas grill, but instead of there being a grill, there's
a plate,
a griddle,
a big plate. Where is it? Outside?
Yeah, I think. Yeah, it's outside on the porch. I think the griddles are becoming more and more popular just because of how versatile they are compared to a grill. Because on a grill, you can't really do that much other than like wieners and steak.
Yep, you can't. You really can't.
Maybe some veggies.
Oh my gosh. Are you enjoying your time back home or are you ready to be back out playing in a nice wooded track at Idlewild?
Oh, I'm so happy I'm not there, to be honest. I'm so happy to be home. Oh, there's no better place than home, honestly. I love the family time and I can't wait for my life to be a home life. one in somewhat of a future.
Yes, sir.
It's so nice here. I can't... Somehow I managed to have it nice at home.
You have a nice home.
It's not that easy.
It's a beautiful life. It's a beautiful
life.
Could
be worse. Could be worse.
Well, we are Crush Pepper XL by a bit of a margin at this point. And it's about time for me to go to bed because I need to wake up early to play my earliest tee time in recent memory other than restarts. But you guys got anything else before we wrap this baby up?
I have 80 more things I could talk about, but I think we should wrap it up.
We'll talk about it next week at Idlewild.
Yeah. Oh, good point. I need to book my flights. I'll do that right now.
I want to thank everyone for listening. I want to thank anyone who likes what we talk about. I want to thank anyone who listens and doesn't like what we talk about. Because yeah. You're not entitled to agree with any of our opinions. And that's what makes you unique.
We're just some guys talking about stuff with a very mild filter over top.
Wow. Is that a heart made
somewhat.
Of chocolate?
Yeah. Chocolate heart.
Lufthansa.
Ooh, Lufthansa.
Oh, yeah.
We're sorry that we stole your bag and took it to New York for
a
weekend.
That's your little consolation prize of absolutely getting raked over the coals on your flights.
No, I only blame myself for that. It was no one else's fault but mine.
Wow, what a German approach. Well, we have to name the episode and then we're done.
I like period, but I'm happily overvoted there.
Just period?
just period.
I like to be continued. Question mark.
All right. I like that too.
Or shout out to the Newsoms. And we can confirm Sarah changed her name.
I think we should call it 1 million Finns.
Oh, God.
Or just 1 million.
Well, we're calling it period. Thank you.
Okay, we're calling it period. There you go.
Or is that not okay? Because it's...
Thank you. Well, we're gonna leave.
Wait, are we still rolling right now?
Yeah, we are. How about we put it in the hands of our amazing producer, Will Davis. He will choose whatever podcast name he sees fit.
I like that. That's the best.
This
idea.
One's for you, Will. There you go. That's the podcast name. All right, everybody. Thank you for listening, and we'll catch you next time.
Peace. Well, we're calling it period. Thank you.